Welcome to Pirate Money Radio with your host, Kevin Freeman, helping you unpack the economic headlines and providing real money solutions.
Good Saturday morning. You want to talk money, you know? You sometimes feel a little strange. We're talking here on Christian radio, and we're talking on Saturday morning. The money thing should have been put off. That should have been, you know, during the week we have to work hard, and Saturday we're going to rest and enjoy. No, we got to talk money. And sometimes when we talk money, people say, well, how do I make money? I want to, you know, 1 Timothy 6:9 says, those who seek to be rich fall into a trap. Let me read the New King James, actually. It says, but those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare and into many foolish and harmful lusts which drown men in destruction and perdition. So why do we concentrate on money week in and week out? Well, you know, Jesus talked about money quite a bit, and we're not telling you to seek material wealth, but we are trying to take care of our families. We're trying to take care of our nation. We're facing financial terrorism and economic warfare abroad. We're facing, you know, two conflicting economic systems. The system where everybody shares everything. It's good. It's socialism. No, it's not good. It is not good. Individual liberty is good. The greater the liberty, the greater the prosperity. And we're not here just to get prosperity. But it sometimes feels like our system is rigged. What if you found out the system was rigged against you with your investing or whatever? I mean, I saw a Dave Chappelle clip, and he was talking about Trump at the debate with Hillary Clinton back in 2016. And President Trump, then candidate Trump, said, you know, the system is rigged. And on the other side, Chappelle points out and he says, there's Obama and Clinton, you know, the black man running for president and the white woman and that. The black man had been president, the white woman run for president. No, it's not rigged. And Trump says, I know it's rigged because I use it. And Chappelle says, well, he uses an expletive. We won't play the clip because he says a bad word there. But then he says, yeah, it is rigged. And he's right. It's just not rigged the way that most people think it is. It's not a bunch of rich people sitting around saying, how can we mess over the rest of the country? It is a system that has slowly become rigged over time. And we're going to cover that here. We got Mike Carter with me. Hi, Mike. Welcome.
Good morning, Kevin.
Yeah, we're going to talk about how the system is rigged and what you can do about it. I did a show on Economic War Room, Why Aren't You Rich? 10 Ways You've Been Made Poorer and What You Should Do About It. Have you ever wondered, where does all the money go?
I've wondered that, and I wonder, as we see the debt climbing higher and higher, where is it really going? We talk a lot about the Cantillon effect as we talk about pirate money. We talk a lot about regulations. I'm sure you're going to get into all that today. But there are times when it feels like it's hard to make it as a Main Street American.
If you went back to when I graduated college in 1983, so it was, you know, 41 years ago, if you went back then and you told me I would be making the amount of money that I'm making now, I mean, my first job out of college, I made $12,000 a year, $1,000 a month. And I graduated near the top of my class. I was graduated from University of Tulsa with highest honor. And my buddies were making a little bit more than that, but I was making 12 grand a month. If you told me that I would make then what I'm making now, I would have said, well, I'll be so wealthy. I'll be so rich. And a lot of people feel that way.
Yeah. And we've done other radio shows here. What would we be making if we didn't have regulation? And that really puts things in perspective.
Yeah. So if you go back, the problem is that over the past 50 years, the dollar's lost 90% of its purchasing power. So, you know, $100,000 that you earn today was the equivalent of $10,000 that you would have earned in 1971. So that's where a lot of it's gone. And we'll talk about that. But millennials are struggling. Here's a Washington Post article, June 23rd. Millennials had it bad financially, but Gen Z may have it worse. We have daughters that fit in that Gen Z category. Mm-hmm. Man, they're struggling. It's not because they're not getting a large amount of money in their paycheck. I mean, the kind of money that we only dreamed of when we were graduating from college. But here, they're getting a lot of money in their paycheck, but it's going out the door just as fast in home prices, rent, mm-hmm. Inflation, mortgages, everything else. So,
Yeah, my daughter got married, got their first apartment, and she was comparing the cost of a one-bedroom versus a two-bedroom. I said, well, with being married, you're probably going to want a little space. You should get the two-bedroom. I'm thinking a little bit for myself, too. It'd be nice to have a guest room. She said, Dad, I'm not spending the extra money on rent. Now they've been there about a year now, and they're kind of like, it's a little tight. We need a little more space. But when I look at when she ran through what the numbers were for the rent, I understood what she said.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big number difference to get that extra bedroom right now.
My first rent two-bedroom apartment was $350. I had a roommate. We split it down the middle. It seemed like a lot of money at the time.
Yeah.
$350, you know, doesn't buy some people's entertainment habits, you know, yeah. Cable bills and streaming services.
In her case, about $2,000, and that's in a smaller market. She's in the Air Force. That's a house payment. That's more than my first house payment.
Oh, way more than my first house payment. Yeah, absolutely right. All right. So here are three things that you got to understand before we get into the 10 reasons you're being made poorer. This is the underlying truths. Number one, this is truth. The greater the liberty, the greater the prosperity. And where there is no individual liberty, there is no prosperity. So I'll contrast the American experiment, which started in 1776, built on the notion of individual liberty, versus France, which had their own revolution in 1789, I think it was, shortly after the American Revolution. And they decided everybody's going to share stuff. It was more a socialist revolution. They ended up killing a bunch of people off with their heads. And in America, we said individuals should be empowered. So our Constitution was written to guarantee inventor rights, which is an amazing thing. It's written in our Constitution. We believed in individual liberty, which brought us, you know, the Wright brothers with airplanes and Charles Otis with the elevator and, you know, so many inventions that have come from America because we gave individual liberty and individual incentives.
Yes, made by our creator, unless you look at some in politics today who say, no, our government should be the ones in control making those decisions.
Yeah, who gives us rights? Do they come from God or do they come from government? They come from God, and government's role, according to the Constitution, is to protect the rights God gave us. By contrast, the Soviet Union didn't believe in rights, communist by nature, no individual liberty. Everybody has to share everything equally from each according to his ability to each according to his needs. Soviet Union is the opposite, no liberty. China, no liberty until they started to open up. And once they start to open up and give liberty, China starts to prosper. But then they take over Hong Kong, known as the freest place on earth, the most prosperous city in the world, and they've cracked down on individual liberty, and Hong Kong has lost its luster. It's lost ground. So all this can make perfect sense when we walk through the terrible 10 things keeping you poorer. But that's the first truth. The greater the liberty, the greater the prosperity. The second truth is that government has no money. Everything a government spends has to be taken from someone else, either in the form of taxes or borrowing. And the third underlying truth, this is the one that hits home individually, something you can do about this, is if you live beyond your means, you will never prosper. So I'm proud of your daughter saying, we're not going to take on the extra room. We're going to try and live within our means.
Yeah. And your daughter is the one that caught on quickly that the government has no money. I think she had to educate another kid in what, third grade or something about that?
Yeah. My younger daughter was told, this is back in the election, quite a while back, one of her classmates says, I want Bernie Sanders to be president. Why? Because he's going to give me free college. And she said, there's no such thing as free college. The government has no money. Anything they're going to take it from you or your parents. There's no such thing as free college. Yeah. So I think we've both done good job raising daughters, teaching them to live within their means. All of this should be obvious. Those three truths, greater liberty, greater prosperity. Second one, government has no money. Any money they get, they have to take from you. And the third one is you'll never prosper if you live beyond your means. You have to live within your means to bring prosperity. So all of those set the stage for the 10 ways that you're being made poorer, and we're going to cover all those when we come back from our break, and then we're going to talk about solutions. How can we make America more prosperous? How can you be more prosperous? It's not all about the money, but it is about God and using our money to bring liberty, security, and values to your next generation, to America, and to your future. We'll be right back after this break.
Welcome back to Pirate Money Radio with your host, Kevin Freeman.
Yeah, I'm here with Mike Carter, and we're talking on Pirate Money Radio about 10 ways that you've been made poor. It seems like there are pirates stealing your money. I mean, you make so much money, you come, and where does it all go? You feel that, Mike?
Definitely feeling that, optimistic that we're going to come up with the plan here.
Yeah, we've got it. First, before we can find out the plan, let's find out what's making us poor. We've got 10. We call them the Terrible 10. And we're going to start with this first one. It's called regulation. It's a big one. We've covered it here on Pirate Money Radio before. And if you want to catch our former podcasts, wherever you get podcasts, go back. AFR.net, piratemoneyradio.com, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, you can go back and you can listen to or watch, depending on your podcast source, where we talked about regulation. This is something that costs people much more than they can ever imagine.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and again, I'm going to go back to the previous segment we've done where, you know, what was the average income if we didn't have regulation?
We're going to get to that. If we had regulation at the level of 60 years prior to when the study was done, the average household income wouldn't be $53,000 as it was in 2014, I guess, when they reported this. It would have been $330,000.
Now, sounds like a more comfortable lifestyle to me.
Yeah, it'd be fun to have that, wouldn't it? But I'm all for smart regulation. You know water. You had a water purity business. We want pure water, don't we?
We do. But we can do that through innovation and not through regulation. And we've worked with companies that are doing that now. And that's exactly the type of thing we need to do.
And we want clean air.
Yep.
So we want some good regulation. This reminds me of a Simpsons episode. And I know here we were talking on Christian radio. We're talking about The Simpsons. This is a 1989 version of The Simpsons. Okay. So it's a little bit, you know, it may be cruder animation. The voices were a little strange compared to what they are today, but it was also a 1989 morality. So it was a little more family values than you might watch in a modern Simpsons cartoon. But there was Dad Homer, and he saw his family about to run over by a car because this intersection had no stop sign. And so he went on a crusade, and I'm going to get a stop sign at this dangerous intersection. It was a good thing. It was good regulation, and we needed that. Did you ever see this episode?
I don't know if I saw that one.
All right. So this episode, I think it was the first ones. We don't have it, but it's the first ones, The Simpsons, the first one they wrote. It was the third one. I think it was the episode number 3 about Homer. It's called Homer's Odyssey is the title of it. And here's Homer Simpson getting a good stop sign in the community, and people applaud him for it. He gets his picture in the paper. Everybody's excited. So he says, you know what? We should do some other safety things. And so pretty soon he adds another regulation, then another regulation, you know, so there's signs, be careful here, do this, don't do this, you know, eggs only sold for 2 days, and all, you know, all of these things. Pretty soon he has laws and rules all over the place, most of which were completely ridiculous.
Yeah, but he got some attention for it, and getting a little, ego-driven thing. Look at what I'm doing out there. Sounds like a few politicians.
Cottage industry is making a little money off of it. And so he's got a whole crowd, and they march down to the nuclear power plant, who's owned by the infamous Montgomery Burns, you know, the richest guy in town. It's the nuclear power plant. And you know what happens? He gets bought off. And Montgomery Burns calls him up to the office and says, yeah, Simpson, you should stop now. And he says, I'm not going to stop, Mr. Burns. He says, well, Simpson, I think what you're doing is noble. I should like to hire you. Come and be my safety inspector. And he gets it. We call that regulatory capture.
Yes, yes. Well, I just saw recently in Denmark, you know, we were talking about clean air and regulation, and they've passed the law now to actually tax, can I say this on American Family Radio, cow farts and cow burps now. So that is officially going through in Denmark, it looks like. And I'm not convinced that's going to do anything for clean air.
No, but it's a way to raise money. It's a way to act like you're doing something. You know, just like with Homer's stop sign, regulators have to justify their work. They keep adding regulations, and they keep micromanaging down to where Bloomberg says you can only have a 16-ounce soda. And they're increasingly capturing us. And then as soon as they do that, those regulators go and find a job in the very industry they were regulating and get the big buck salaries. That's what regulatory capture really is.
Well, I don't want the job measuring the cow farts and cow burps. So I don't know who's kind of queuing up for that one, but that's probably going to be very highly paid.
Yeah, they won't measure them. They'll just say, you got a cow, it must burp and fart, and so you got to pay this fine or whatever.
I wonder if they'd charge more if it smells more foul. I mean, that might be the next step of regulation.
Oh, gosh, that's awful. You know, animals passing gas, you know, or babies, you know, they're going to do that to babies. I remember we were driving in the car one time. We had our dog and we had our baby there. And boy, the baby, I don't know what it was that she'd eaten, but oh my gosh, it smelled so bad. The dog was sticking her head in the airflow just to get away from it.
That's unusual for dogs.
Yeah, that is unusual. All right, but think of all of the rules that we had during COVID. As soon as they thought they could put one rule in, they put another rule in, another rule. So every time you go into a store, they would mark where you could stand in the aisle 6 feet apart. And they've admitted there was no science behind that.
I still see some of the little decals on the floors right now. It's crazy.
When you give regulators the opportunity, they will continue to regulate and continue to regulate, and then they'll go get their job in the big industry. I'm going to give you a perfect example of regulations where they're impacting and destroying sound business, and that is Uber. You use Uber.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's more convenient. I like it better than taxis, 1,000 times better than a taxi. Well, who wouldn't like it? You own your own business. You set your own hours. Love talking to the Uber drivers. They're all entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
And say, I've talked to one Uber driver who would run the one ride from my neighborhood to the airport because he worked at the airport. And he said, why shouldn't I take a passenger with me? And I'll show up and he'd make, you know, an extra $30 each way on his commute. And so it padded his salary. It reduced pollution because there was one fewer car going to the airport. Saved me money. It was very convenient, very sweet.
Oftentimes, right? Legal immigrants that are, you know, here, thankful for what we have. And I have those conversations all the time. America doesn't realize what they're doing right now. I left a country that had this. And if I pay them with transactional gold and silver, then they really get excited. It's like, how do I get this?
Yeah.
So they get that they're entrepreneurs. They understand the value of money, of real money.
And it's good for society. And so you know what they're doing in California on June 10th of this year? An 11-judge panel in California, asked by the state of California, overturned the will of the voters and demanded that Uber drivers are treated as employees rather than independent business people.
That's kind of like Reagan's old statement. I'm here from the government and I want to help. You know, the scariest words out there. It's like, now you're going to take an entrepreneur and tell them, we're going to make you an employee.
Well, what does that do? You work at the airport. Now you're an employee of a company driving someone. You're not just given a gig job and you're not just helping out society. So he's not going to do that. I don't want to be another employee and you tell me what to do. They'd set the hours. There are 1.4 million workers in California doing app-based driving. And when they add this regulation, along with this attempt, by the way, to overturn Proposition 22. Prop 22 was passed 4 years ago, and it said you cannot end independent contractors. They told the state, by proposition, freely elected democracy, and the government says, no, we're taking you to court. We're going to invalidate the proposition that the people voted in. I thought they were pro-democracy. Not when it goes against what they want to see.
Yep.
So this means less individual liberty. This means less prosperity. Uber works because it has independent drivers. And if you take that away, we're back to taxi cabs.
Mm-hmm.
And which is better, Uber with independent drivers or taxi cabs with employees?
And is that driver going to make more money as an employee or more money as an entrepreneur?
More money as an entrepreneur. And they're going to take care of you better because they're going to want a high rating. Mm-hmm. They care about things. It's the difference between going and seeing FedEx or the U.S. Postal Service. Mm-hmm. FedEx is independent from the government. But wouldn't it be better if you had FedEx and every driver that dropped off was an independent contractor and you knew they were making money, you tipped? Everything about liberty is better than big bureaucracy. But how does that make you poor? What do you think? How does it make you poor?
How does what make me poor?
More regulation.
Oh. Well, it starts with the fact that if they're regulating everything else, they're probably going to be regulating what I can make, and they're going to be regulating what I can do, and they're going to be capping what I can make.
And no innovation, no competition, no. Prices go higher because it soon becomes a monopoly. It costs you money. I want an independent Uber driver rather than one monopoly taxi cab company because I know that they're going to compete on price.
Yeah. And remember the taxi. It wasn't that long ago, taxis were everywhere. They weren't clean. You know, they were dirty inside. There was not that sense of pride and ownership so much compared to Uber, who they make sure their cars are in good shape. They're clean.
Because you rate them on the app.
They want the right music for you. They want all these things to happen where the taxi drivers before, you just kind of got what you got.
Sometimes there's a bottle of water or breath mint or whatever. And that is the difference. But in New York City, where they had some of the dirtiest taxi cabs I've ever been in, you had to pay $1 million to the New York, to the government to get your medallion, so you could drive a taxi. So regulation means less opportunity. It impacts your earnings potential. I'll give you
that
another.
$1 million went to the drivers, right? You know, I'm sure every driver was.
The $1 million went from the drivers or the company. That's how they kept people out. Mm-hmm. Regulations keep people from entering in. So, you know, the idea is, producer just put up on the screen, do you want a Russian car or an American car? Well, when it was heavily regulated, controlled Russian cars, it came in one size, one color, one everything.
Was it Yugo? Wasn't there a Yugo Russian car?
That was Yugoslavian, but Yugo, okay. You don't want that. But this can really, truly impact the economy. For example, they have just tried to raise the standards on air quality rules, and according to Jay Timmons, the president and CEO of the National Association of Manufacturers, it's going to cost us 1 million jobs because they're going to raise the allowance or lower the allowance for fine particulates in the air from 12 micrograms per cubic meter to 9 micrograms per cubic meter, which sounds okay. I want clean air. It sounds okay. But what you got to realize is not even Europe has that high of a standard. Nowhere in the world has that high of a standard. It's a ridiculous standard. So what's going to happen is American manufacturers are going to close plants here, open them in countries that have no standards. The air quality will get worse, not better. And 1 million Americans will lose jobs and investors will lose their investment. This is what happens when you have less liberty and less prosperity.
I'm from the government. I'm here to help. Going wrong again.
And the globalists are going to prosper from all this. Montgomery Burns is going to win again. All right, we take a break. We'll be right back with the other 9 reasons.
Pirate Money Radio, helping you give, spend, and invest in ways that align with liberty, security, and values. Welcome back with your host, Kevin Freeman.
Wow, we're talking about the high price that we pay to have regulation here in America. The regulation regime has gotten excessive. Now, I'm all for sound, good, smart regulation, but what we've gotten is a crazy regime, a bureaucracy, an administrative state that is constantly putting up new burdens and new things you should do. And I just saw that the new regulatory burden under President Biden, just under President Biden, will take 10.34 billion hours to comply with just the paperwork, the equivalent of 15,000 lifetimes.
Wow. And who gets to do that paperwork?
We American citizens do. Yeah, it's like you look forward to doing your taxes, the companies, everybody's having to fill out all these forms that Biden is requiring of us. And, you know, under President Biden, they've added $600 billion per year. According to a congressional study, $600 billion per year in cost of new regulations just under President Biden.
But he's not going to go after the middle class. No middle class people will be having to pay for that.
Yeah, right. I just saw the IRS. We're only going after the ultra wealthy. Now it's down to those making $400,000 or more, which is still pretty wealthy. But then it's going to be $200,000. They hired all those new IRS agents
because they needed to drive revenue, and then they create a regulatory piece that cost how much did you say? $600 billion. over what time frame?
Additional $600 billion per year just under Biden.
Year.
Biden has added so many regulations through his administrative state that it's costing us $600 billion. So he has one-upped his old boss, President Obama, who added during his 8 years, $500 billion a year. So you add that up. That's $4 trillion cost to the economy under Biden and 4 years under Obama. 4 years under Biden is another $6.4 trillion. Now we're talking real money here.
Now, if you're an entrepreneur or not in government, you know you have two things you can do, right? You can either raise revenues, margins, or you can cut costs. They're on one side talking about, oh, we're going to raise the revenue on high income earners potentially, but at the same time, they're raising expenses dramatically, which will not even offset it, which is why we get to $35 trillion in debt.
Yeah, it's the regulatory burden that's been put on us. It's slowed our economy down. So that just from Obama and Biden, $6.4 trillion. Now, I do have some interesting good news. According to the same congressional study, under President Trump, the 4 years of Trump, on an annual basis, he actually cut $323.9 billion per year. So
going the right direction.
So when Obama got elected, adding in Biden, $6.4 trillion, now you got 4 years where you dropped off about $1.3 trillion. So we're only $5.3 trillion of regulation because Trump reduced regulation by $323 billion a year.
Wouldn't that be a great platform to run on as a candidate? I don't know if I've heard any talk about that. I mean, you can go all the way back to Al Gore, who said he's going to get rid of waste and he had a hammer, but he never did any of that stuff. But truly having a conversation like this within the political spectrum of reducing regulations is puts politicians out of jobs. That's the problem.
The last real politician that talked about this was Ross Perot. Perot talked about it at length. And President Trump clearly reduced regulation. Maybe he'll bring it up when in his debates with Biden. But bottom line is
he did have a policy to reduce what was it? Certain number of regulations for every new one that came out.
He did have that policy. But regulatory costs is excessive. Just in the manufacturing industry alone, in the year 2022, the cost was $3.079 trillion, 12% of our entire economy. That is $12,800 per year per employee. We could, in other words, if we reduced our regulation just from the recently added ones, everybody'd get a $12,800 a year raise.
Again, I think this would be great political platform for somebody.
Yeah. Well, that's just the first one of our 10.
I'm going to give you 12,000 more.
10 reasons. And you mentioned just as we started, Reason Magazine 11 years ago published a study that showed that federal regulations overall have made each of us 75% poorer than we otherwise would have been. When they wrote this, our economy was $16 trillion in size, and they did a study. They went back to 60 years earlier, and they said if we'd kept regulation at the exact same level it was 60 years before, then our economy would be 4 or 5 times larger, and the average American salary would be $330,000 a year rather than the $53,000 it was 11 years ago or the $64,000 it is today. Now, stop and think about this. 11 years ago, our salaries were $53,000. Today, they're $64,000 on average. Regulations have massively increased during that period, and so has inflation. Mm-hmm. $64,000 doesn't buy as much as $53,000. We've lost ground. That's the bottom line from all these studies. Regulations are making us poorer.
And the wealth gap gets bigger and bigger and bigger.
And that is just number one of the 10 reasons. Now, one of these is all these ESG regulations, the environment, the climate, and all of that. The climate regulations, one author estimated that climate change rules alone will transfer $100 trillion from all the rest of us to the wealthy. And I heard the founder of Greenpeace, Patrick Moore, being interviewed by our friend Jackie Deason on the Jackie Daly Show. And he said, yeah, I founded Greenpeace because I believed in green, good environment, and I believed in peace. And that whole movement got hijacked by regulators so they could build these castles of a regulatory regime and control people. They didn't believe in peace anymore. They funded a bunch of wars, and they certainly don't believe in the environment. They believe in environmental regulations. He said, do you ever wonder why there's all of these subsidies for electric vehicles and only the rich buy electric vehicles? So we're really taking money from the working class and giving it to rich people so they can buy their extra fancy Tesla.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sad. And as we do that, we know that our global adversaries and even enemies, I will say now, are laughing all the way because we just push more and more economic freedom to them.
Oh, yeah. So if you want to buy an electric car, it's manufactured, so much of it, the batteries and everything else are made in China, which have no environmental standards. And as a result, the environment's worse off. The government's taking money from middle class and poor people and giving it to rich people to buy electric cars that are, you know, have batteries made with rare earth minerals strip mined in China. It really is making us poorer, and it's not helping the environment at all. That's just one of 10. So let's jump into this. We have to go fast. The second one, the way that you're being made poorer, surprisingly, is Social Security. That was supposed to keep you from turning poor. That's right.
Yes. Now you worry about, are they going to have enough money to pay you even if you do qualify?
There's no question. Do we have enough to pay Social Security? That's the question. They don't ever question, are we taking money from people? Absolutely, they're taking out of every paycheck up to the first $168,600 every American earns. They will take about 15% of their paycheck, half from you, half from your employer. You see it every month, don't you?
Yep. Yep.
Right there in your check. And you have to pay your half directly. And if you're an independent business person, though,
you're like, paying it.
Yeah, you pay all of it.
Yep.
Yeah, that's the problem is they're taking it. So what are they doing with the money? Do you know where it goes?
To fund all these other projects.
It goes into a lockbox, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. I forgot about the lockbox. Yeah.
The lockbox.
And then they can just keep printing money for everything else they want to do.
Yeah, though. It goes into U.S. Treasury bills. That's what they claim it is going into. They spend it, really, but it's an IOU. The government will pay us.
Well, at least somebody's buying the Treasury bills.
Yeah, exactly. They got, you know, $35 trillion in debt. You got to sell them to somebody. So why don't we sell them to the people that have put their money into Social Security? But what would have happened if instead of putting in Social Security, you put that same amount of money into the private stock markets and bond markets, and you got a financial planner and you invested it that way? So
I've heard from the government, we're not smart enough to do that on our own.
Yeah, no, I'm not supposed to talk about this and get into detail. So I'm not advising anybody. I've been a financial advisor for most of my career, but not on this radio program. Absolutely not. I don't know you. You're watching. I don't know you. You're listening. I don't know you. So I can't give you financial advice. But I can give you information. And here's some information that came from the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College. You think that is a crazy right-wing institution, Boston College?
I'm not sure that's going to qualify for the right, but let's see what they came up with.
All right. Well, so what they did was they did a comparison of returns between private investing in the stock market and government treasury bills starting in 1928, right before the crash. They included the crash, which is good idea. You know, if you start after the crash, that would be irresponsible. But they did the responsible thing, started right before the crash in 1928. And they went all the way to 2022 when the study ended, and they compared the average return for the S&P 500, 10-year treasury bond, 3-month treasury bill, and they said, what happens if you'd invested in those instead of the 3-month treasury bills? Now, admittedly, the treasury bills had less volatility, less risk, lower risk. But the stock market and the treasury bonds over time, a 60-40 portfolios, which some financial advisors recommend, if you'd invested on the average rate comparing private investments versus Social Security, which would have gotten a 3.3% annual return, you would have 2.9 times actually, the amount of money that you would have if you just invested in Social Security as it stands now, private versus the Social Security we have now. So yeah. Which would you rather have? Would you rather have a dollar or $2.9?
Yeah, I'll take the 2.9. And I wonder if, you know, if we talk gold occasionally on here, you know, if you, instead of treasury bonds, if you just held it in gold, what would it have done?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, gold was $20 an ounce in 1928. So I don't know. We'll have to look at that sometime. Mm-hmm. But the average Social Security check a person gets today is about $1,800 a month. If you tripled that, you'd have over $5,000 a month. Could you see the difference? The average earning today is about $64,000 a year. If you got $5,000 a month, you'd retire pretty much at full salary.
Yeah.
And you know, they've done this. There are actual places, there's counties in Texas that opted out and let you invest instead of doing Social Security. It's very rare. They don't talk about it very much because the results are astounding.
It's working.
Yeah, no, it would work. Now, I don't want to say anything negative about Social Security. I don't want men in black suits and dark glasses to show up and cart me off. I don't want the IRS to show up my home. I love Social Security. What a great government program it is. Everybody ought to pay into Social Security. It's required by law, and I'm thankful that I have it, and I'm hopeful it's going to be there for myself and my kids and my future. So we're not dissing Social Security. We're just asking, is the way the government invests it causing you to be a little bit poorer than you otherwise would be?
Yes.
Yeah, the facts are there. Not trying to say anything political or anything else, just trying to say what the facts are. All right, we've only covered two. We have 10 that we have to cover. We'll talk about number third way that you're being made poorer right after this break.
Pirate Money Radio, helping you give, spend, and invest in ways that align with liberty, security, and values. Welcome back with your host, Kevin Freeman.
All right, we started with the top two, the biggest dirty 10, terrible 10 of ways that you're being made poorer. Number one is excess regulation. That's a government thing. Number two is Social Security isn't investing in the private markets. It's investing more in a socialist way, just only in government investments and so forth. The number three way that you're being made poorer is healthcare costs.
I've definitely felt that one.
Didn't we pass an Affordable Care Act to make our health insurance costs go down?
We passed the Affordable Care Act. I prefer to call it Obamacare because there's been nothing affordable about it.
Have your premiums gone up or down?
Up.
Has your deductible gone up or down?
Up.
Has your out-of-pocket gone up or down?
I don't even think I have insurance. I think all I have is out of pocket. It just seems like the way it works. And I had a daughter that went through a cancer early on when all this was taking place in transition. But by the time I looked at what I was paying in premiums and in deductibles and everything else, I mean, six figures out there of being basically self-insured. What makes that affordable care?
Wow. The Heritage Foundation says the cost of health insurance has doubled in the decade after Obamacare was enacted. The answer why? Red tape and mandates. And here's the shocking thing. They required a bunch of nuns to include abortions in their health insurance policy, even though abortion is against their faith, and these nuns are celibate by vow. And here's the other shocking fact. I went in, I was having a test run, and I walked in, and they said, we need to collect your deductible up front. And I said a simple question, what if I paid cash instead? The shocking thing, the cash pay for the entire procedure was lower than just my deductible, which is unbelievable. So health insurance is making health costs more expensive. Do you know the health insurance companies negotiate with all the providers? This is what we'll pay you. And in those negotiations, we're not involved at all. They make all the negotiation, and they've come up with deductibles higher than I could get paid by cash. You know, here's the solution, health transparency.
We had Foster Freeze on once talking about, you know, what a beautiful thing if you could see what the actual cost is and compare rates.
The late, great Foster Freeze, great man, and if we could walk into a provider and say, how much do you charge for this procedure? And they said, $2,000. And say, I on the internet over here, I can get it for $1,200. They might price match. That's how I buy cars.
Wouldn't that be great?
And unfortunately, you're not able to do that because of the way the system's structured. Now, the government actually has tried to pass regulations to force hospitals to buy this. And so this would be a regulation I'd be in favor of. But, you know, regulatory capture, which we talked about as reason number one, has prevented us from doing that. So that's making you poor. Reason number four, it's obvious. You brought it up earlier. It's inflation. Inflation's made. In 1971, if you had a salary of $10,000, you had the buying power that people earning $100,000 today have in buying power. That is means we've lost 90% of our purchasing power. And inflation, you know how much it's up under President Biden alone?
Under Biden? 10%.
20%. You knew that. The average price, look at
well,
it.
Well, I was only counting 1 year, or maybe I was only counting last month the way it's been going.
That's exactly right. 20% food, 20% gas, 20% rent, or higher in all of those things. The very things that we buy and spend money on, it's making us poorer. So here, eggs are up 43%, airfare 38%, cookies 26%, pet food 23%, groceries, food at home, an average 21%, rent 21%. These are the prices that we're paying. It's making us poorer. So they did what? They raised the minimum wage in California, $20 an hour. Is that working for them?
Well, I just saw a friend of mine started up a tech company that has an automated robot burger flipper, and it looks like he's off to a great start.
Yeah.
That's
because they're going to fire employees. Now, they need the automated robot slicer because Arby's on Sunset Boulevard said, we can't afford $20 an hour. It's been there 55 years. They cited minimum wage as their top reason. Minimum wages, all they do is they cause a wage price spiral. So you pay people more, which means prices go up, which means they need to be paid more, which means prices go up. The minimum wage in 1964 was $1.25. The silver in five quarters in 1964 was sufficient to pay the minimum wage then. The silver in those same quarters today is over $25 in value, enough to pay minimum wage. It's not that prices are going up, it's that the dollar's buying power is going down. And that is reason number four. You know why we're getting poorer? That's one of them. Reason number
And we got a solution to that.
We do. So
that's one that could actually be implemented in a relatively short time. I mean, these regulation things, that's going to be a little bit longer. We need some real strategic thinkers, but we've got something.
Yeah, so minimum wages was reason number five, actually. Inflation was four, minimum wages five. Reason number six is open borders, which is an enormous cost to society. We're spending $150 billion a year, according to the U.S. House, and maybe as much as $400 billion per year just paying for the people that have illegally come across our border. That works out to between $2,000 and $5,000 per family per year. Could you use an extra $2,000 to $5,000 a year, Mike?
Yeah, to me, this is just shocking and hard to believe that this is taking place today. I mean, this is literally according to plan, which you've talked about in your book. But it hurts when I see this.
It doesn't even take into account the impact on wages because you have all these illegal workers who are willing to take the job for a little less money. And so you maybe lose your job. And that's actually happened.
And it drives up housing costs. It drives up everything. It's crazy.
Yep. Reason number seven, this is shocking to me too. It's called the war on poverty. We're being made poorer because we're fighting a war against poverty. Mm-hmm. That's what the government tends to do sometimes. It's ironic, but in 60 years ago, Lyndon Johnson began the war on poverty, and we've spent $30 trillion fighting it with welfare payments and everything else. Well, that's the vast majority of our outstanding federal debt, which is making us poorer. And at the same time, it's fighting against the three simple rules that Brookings Institute says can eliminate poverty in America. They said if we help people to, number one, at least finish high school, number two, get a full-time job, and number three, wait until age 21 to get married and have children. You do those three things, and poverty disappears in America. Guess what? The war on poverty has broken up families because they pay, you know, it used to be called welfare queens. I don't think we can use that term anymore, but they pay people to have extra babies. The father's leaving the home. They pay people not to get full-time jobs. You can, instead of getting a job, you can get paid. And you don't get married and you have more children sooner, destroying the war on poverty.
Even Homer Simpson couldn't have messed it up this much as the politicians have done this.
No, it's terrible. You know, the average share of our debt personally, according to usdebtclock.org, is $100,000. That's much how much we would have to pay off our debt. Every American would have to pay that. A family of four would have to pay $400,000. So we're poorer, whether we know it or not, because of this war on poverty.
I think Biden's going to forgive that for us for his next election pledge.
Yeah, and he's going to take it from us to forgive
exactly
it.
Right.
That's how it works. Number eight's crony capitalism, the government where their members of Congress are using insider trading to make themselves rich at your expense. Crony capitalism also happens where Wall Street takes all the good investments. When we were younger and just starting out, you could invest in Microsoft, you could invest in Apple or Amazon and all those great companies that have been built and they came public. Now, when companies come public, all the cream is gone. And I'll use Uber as an example of this. The people who funded Uber that were not real people, I mean, these are the wealthy, wealthy. They called it a unicorn investment. They put money in Uber. They made billions. When Uber came public, if you stuck your money into it and you bought it, first shares come public on the stock market, it was 4 years before you even were able to get your money back by selling it. That's what I mean by crony capitalism. All right, so we got to keep heading on with our reasons. Reason eight was crony capitalism. Reason nine, politicians buying votes by selling out your future, like I'm going to pay off all of your college debt. Where does the government get its money?
Well, your daughter told us well, from us.
They have no money. Government has no money. Once they say, we're going to pay off all your college, that means the government's going to assume it and you're going to pay it in taxes. Whether you went to college or not, you're going to pay it. It's socializing education and they're just cutting us out. So the bottom line is Forbes said $393 billion would be spent on the federal student loan program, $3,100 per household. This is why we're being made poorer. Our government debt, $35 trillion, is also causing, and I think this is probably the last reason, this is not the last reason. We got one more after this, higher interest rates. Mortgage payments have gone up from $15,000 a year per average to $25,000 a year, $10,000 out of your pocket because interest rates are higher because the government has to borrow to pay that $35 trillion. Now, let me get into reason number 10, the last one, and this is the one that's on us, on me, it's on you, and that is we're spending beyond our means. Yeah, I gave you nine reasons we're spending beyond our means. Everything's too expensive. We're not making as much as we should. But unless you live within your means, you will never get out of difficult financial times. If you spend more than you make, you will go to the poorhouse. That's the way it works. But if you had invested instead $6,500 in an IRA every year, that's the maximum amount you can put according to law, starting at age 25 and keeping it invested until 40 years later, age 65, you could build up quite the nest egg in a traditional portfolio based on the past, no guarantees for the future. You might have accumulated $1.5 million by age 65. That's the bottom line, is we've got to be smart with our money. Our liberty, security, and values depend on it. $6,500 a year is a lot of money to put in, but $1.5 million to take out, that would be worthwhile. So we've just outlined 10 ways that you're being made poor. Nine of those are government and society making you poorer. One of them is on you. These are the truths. We've got to promote liberty, security, values. We're here on Pirate Money Radio to help you do that. So you help us. Spread the word. Get people to listen to Pirate Money Radio on podcasts anywhere you can. Thank you so much for listening. God bless. Have a great week. Pirate Money Radio and Kevin Freeman.